The University Tower chimes, ringing another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right is Professor Heather Hill.
Hi.
Hi, Heather. I noticed that you have on a very autumnal sweater today.
Yeah.
Tell them the story.
Oh, there's a story behind the sweater.
No, there's not really. I needed something to wear on the plane when I had to go to New Hampshire recently.
Yes. So I
picked this up at Meijer.
Oh, so that's your plane sweater.
Yeah, and I was thinking, it's very long, and I thought I was going to look kind of like a bag lady in it. But I noticed that there were a lot of women in the airport wearing these very long, kind of cozy sweaters.
Absolutely.
You started the fashion trend.
It's perfect.
They all had window seats.
And this was...
I mean, Jim, don't you have ocean liner clothing? I mean, you know, it's like...
Yes.
So I have been wearing it a lot since then.
Well, that's nice. Professor Stephen Manning is also here. The Jazz Foundation of America.
Good afternoon, Matthew.
How are you?
Mount Fuji... It often is not snow-covered, the top. So the snow comes back.
Got it.
And it's about a month late this year.
Okay, well.
Coming back.
Global warming.
It's a cultural, spiritual symbol for Japanese people.
Sure, sure.
And all these pictures are, you know.
And it's not as beautiful without the snow on the cap.
Oh, for sure. It's beautiful with the snow. I saw a picture of it in the paper, and I think one day this past week, there was finally a little snow, but it's this little white strip at the top. And it's usually, you know, the top quarter or third is really beautifully white cap.
And what would the Matterhorn look like if it were just rocky?
Yeah.
Same sort of thing.
It'll look rocky. So.
I saw that unless, actually I thought this was phrased very well, unless the rest of 2024 goes on a don't let the tigers get hot style streak of 0 degree days, 2024 will be the hottest year on record in the world. So that will be three straight years that we've recorded that record.
What does your Farmer's Almanac say about this coming winter?
So it says, quite ironically, and so I'm coming from lifelong Detroiter, you know, of apparently half a century, and I'm going to say it says that it's going to actually be quite warm and quite wet. But I feel, because we had a warm and wet winter last year, that we're in for a walloping. So that would be my guess. But the truth is, if we start having winters in a row that are all just sort of wet and cool, that could be the way it's going to be going forward. Yeah. So. Yeah.
I hope it stays warm through Tuesday because I discovered this morning that our boiler is out.
Great. Great.
And I got up and, you know, you have this feeling that, you know, it feels a little bit cooler than it should, right? So I checked the thing and it said it's 68, but it's actually 63.
Oh, Jesus.
And the heat thing is blinking, so it's obviously sending a signal to the thing downstairs. I go downstairs, check the water, it's cold.
Oh, my.
Can't get a guy until Tuesday.
Of course.
Belated birthday wishes, Professor Mayo.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, happy birthday.
Much appreciated. Didn't get exactly what I wanted, but maybe
world peace does not come easy. So.
No, it does not.
It is Christmas.
Yes. Thanks for your wishes, Professor Jim Tubbs. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. I like your shirt.
Thank you.
How many years have you had it, hopefully?
I bought it last year.
Oh, okay. I know so many people that, you know, like they've been tailgating and going to all the games for like 40 years and finally they're getting something for it.
Yeah.
I'm wearing my Lions shirt, listeners. I did tell my students this morning that about 14 years ago, somebody mouthed off to me in the middle of this big lab quiz. So there was over 100 students in the room, not all mine. It was like all sections put together. And I said, you know, you can have your points back if the Lions win 3 games this season. And the students at that time gave it the old, ooh, you know, whatever. And that was the year they went 0-16. So anyway, that student did not get those points back. How far we've come that people are now putting money down
they
on
would already
no
have
more
their
losses
back.
And making
Double
the Super Bowl
eight.
This year. Yeah. So it better be good news for the city of Detroit in February. That's all I got to say.
Mm-hmm.
Better be good news. Professor Dan Maggio is here.
Hello, Matt.
Fresh hoodie from Traverse City.
Well, I wouldn't freshly washed.
Oh, okay.
But
right.
it's an old
oh, okay.
sweatshirt.
All right.
So. It was a nice day. I have shorts on.
Absolutely.
You always have shorts on.
I know. Yeah. I did not give up my shorts for easily, but it's beautiful. When it gets below 50, I usually
put them away.
Curling might be a little less pleasant in shorts.
Actually, I want to curl in shorts.
Do you?
Because it makes, yes, but... So men do curl in kilts.
That's true.
But I don't curl in shorts, partially because I don't want my like knee and hairs to rub off on the ice, because any sort of debris on the ice is not really welcome.
It's kinda yes.
This was not the explanation I was expecting.
It's funny that this is coming up, although not too coincidental. I was explaining to my students who asked me point blank just this afternoon, Dan, did you take Calc 3, Prof. Mungo? And I said, yes, I did. And I had a vision of a beshorted Dan Maggio taking a quick smoking break. We had the one night a week, 3.5 hour Calc 3, and it was brutal. And you would always be like, hey, guys, we're taking
Calc
a break.
Is Calc 3 like integral?
It is actually like polar coordinates. There was a lot of drawing.
And multivariate.
Multivariable, calculus. Yes. But I had Dan for that class.
It's too bad Jeff wasn't it. You know, it's funny to hear you say, describe me smoking, because I'm almost to the point where I can't even think of myself
that's
as
wonderful.
A former smoker.
I think that's great.
Since 2009, so it's 15 years.
Congratulations.
With me, it's great. Since 1999.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe it.
See? That's great news. I just remember we were on the first floor of this building, and where you went to smoke was right outside the window where the students were. And I got no place to, you know, be, no place to go. And I'm sitting there, and you just went outside the window and then came right back in all winter long. It was pretty funny. Considering how funny things can be, we had a pretty good Halloween in our neighborhood. Professor Dave Chow.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Things got a little interesting when you pet the neighbor's dog, and I quote, our ancestors didn't get along.
I had to apologize to the dog. That's all. So.
What?
My ancestors and your ancestors wouldn't have gotten along is the message he was sending to the new pooch in our neighborhood.
Lovely dog, too, by the way.
Yeah, it was a lovely dog. Palmer the dog, yes. Mm-hmm.
Loose? Was this dog loose?
No.
No, it was...
It was on the leash. Remember, it was the unicorn.
Yeah, it was a unicorn.
I was thinking of our thing on, Caesar.
Oh. The dog gets loose.
Something on Next Door, and there was a picture of this large dog. And somebody saying, this dog is running around.
Loose.
I think it was on Piccadilly, Beth Street.
It's actually on
Does anybody
Street.
Know who it is? And then there was a response that said...
Somebody just posted right after, that's Caesar.
And they gave the address. He lives at 201.
Oh, my gosh.
No they reference to the owner. No reference
but,
to
but
the owner.
But knew the address of the dog. Like, the dog had a business card, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's Caesar. Oh, okay. Yeah, thank you.
And to Brute? Like,
yeah. I guess he's been in the neighborhood for 20 years.
Yeah,
he's the real mayor of the neighborhood.
He's lived here a long time.
There you go.
He's the mayor.
Well, folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win a prize. You can send us the questions in a number of ways. Email us at atp@udmercy.edu. Find us on Facebook and Instagram, or listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. Dear professors, sent in by Anonymous, we hope that you are looking forward to a lovely Thanksgiving break. Spending time with family and friends, away from the office and insistent email, and celebrating all you have to be thankful for. And of course, eating wonderful food, which is the focus of this question set.
Oh, food.
I've heard that you all like food. Yes. How many people did AAA expect to fly over the last Thanksgiving holiday period between Wednesday and Sunday in the United States? How many people?
Under their own power? Oh.
I believe they were aided.
Oh,
45 million.
25
that
million.
That is a little high, and 25 is a little high. Yeah.
14 million.
That's a little high.
9 million.
Surprising.
But still high.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Was this during COVID?
Yeah, was this during
3 million.
No, this was just last year.
3 million.
I mean, I'll give it to you for 3. It's 4.7. Now, we'll contrast that, just to be careful. We certainly did not view flying as all travelers in the United States.
All right.
Just let's say 5 million for flying over Thanksgiving, but how many total traveled?
Oh,
okay.
18.
Including driving?
Now you're too low.
50, so everything. Including 50 million.
It's 50 million people.
Wow.
It's a chunk of the country just moves around.
I had heard
the
50 million stat, but I think that that was just driving.
Yep. What is the total population of the United States?
355? Oh, I thought 55? It was 250.
330? 330 or something?
330. Yeah.
So that's a big chunk. It's like a sixth of the whole population.
No, it was 335 last year. It's got to be more than that now.
Okay. I thought it was 355 in 2024.
It might be declining, though.
Oh, my. How old is the Emmy-winning television special, A Charlie Brown Thanksgiving?
50.
50 years, yeah.
And it's appearing on NBC this year.
Yeah, it's coming back.
Finally.
Mm-hmm, finally. What is the Guinness World Record for the heaviest single turkey?
Oh, we had this a couple years ago.
68.
What does single in that question?
Well, I don't want to say it's a group of turkeys that all stood on the scale 72. At the same time. It's higher than 72
110.
Pounds.
What?
It's lower than 110.
92.
98.
It's lower than both of those numbers.
80.
Okay. It's 86 pounds.
Because, okay. Do you remember years ago, pounds. Jeff Boats...
That could have fed quite a few people.
How big would that be? I mean, like, physically.
Jeff Boats had to figure, like, in order to de-thaw that turkey, take him, like, a month and a half, remember?
Yeah. Well,
and we compared it to your eldest child at that time.
That's assuming you could freeze it.
Assuming you could get it in a freezer,
That's about the same size as our husky dog.
I'd like to see the oven it was cooked in, too.
Open I thought it was similar to the ones in our neighborhood.
Oh, the the wild turkeys in our neighborhood.
Or they could have deep fat fried it in a huge vat.
Ooh. Or they could have cut it up and just baked it in smaller
individual pieces.
Once it gets that big, I wonder how good it is to eat.
It's probably not. I was going to say.
Boy, a turkey leg, that would be a weapon.
I know. Whoa. How big is that turkey leg?
83-pound turkey.
That's where the Renaissance Festival is, like, lined up at the door.
At the turkey leg, yeah, that's right. What is a group of turkeys called?
Gaggle?
Oh, it's not what it
that's
says
geese.
Here.
Oh, my bad. Almost. A throng?
No.
Nope. Actually, I have three possible synonyms, so I'll take any of them.
A throttle.
A flock.
A flock is the easiest level.
A waddle?
Here. They are sometimes called a gang, or the very old term called a rafter of turkeys.
Rafter. Gang. Mm-hmm. Rafter. Gang, I like that.
What kind of turkeys gobble?
What kind do?
Male?
Male turkeys gobble. Females chirp and cluck, apparently.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. What percent of all the cranberries consumed annually in the United States of America are eaten just at Thanksgiving?
What percent?
What percentage?
15.
43%.
No, I would go...
48%.
I'm going to go 82. I'm just going to shoot high.
Oh, my gosh. No. What did
Steven,
I say?
We're just waiting. You said 15.
I'm going higher.
Yeah, I would say 65.
You're all off, but Heather's the closest. 20%. So it's just 20%.
I forgot. I wonder if that includes the
juices.
Oh, because that was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
In what year was the first jellied cranberry log in a can sold?
Oh, the cranberry.
1932.
49.
52.
I'll go in between. It's 41, so it's right in between but what you both said.
Oh, so it's a wartime thing?
Envisioning or remembering the sound of that thing, the schlock.
Yeah.
I love that sound.
Probably ocean spray.
I love
the unleashing of the cranberry beast.
Yep.
Yeah.
Where do cranberries grow? Hint.
Bogs.
In bogs.
Don't
in
think of the ads you see on TV.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
From the spaghetti tree.
They don't grow in bogs. Yes, they do.
They do, but they don't, if that makes any sense. So it says here, cranberries grow on dry land in mostly sandy soil. They get flooded because they float, and then you can harvest them by just taking them off the top of the water.
Oh, so they deliberately flood them they can just pluck them out of the water with nets.
But the ads make you think.
They do.
Guys in boots like they're fly fishing or something.
You
like
make your own bog. Okay, one of these two is roughly 12 times the sugar content of the other.
Wait a minute, back it up. What did you just say?
One of these two is roughly 12 times the sugar content of the other, which is
what? That sounds like your children.
Sweet potatoes or yams?
Ooh. Yams.
They're not the same thing.
I'm going to go with yams with jam.
Yeah, I'm going to go yams.
It's the sweet potato, of course. Yeah, sweet potatoes are sweeter than yams.
Me, Professor Tubbs.
It's in the name of the thing. Sweet.
Because you never hear of candied sweet potatoes, but you hear of candied yams all the time.
It's a marketing thing.
And you got to put marshmallows on it.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Ooh, and pecans and lots of butter.
The tiny ones.
Yes, pecans.
I'm looking in
brown sugar.
Professor Hill's direction. Uh-oh. Yams are more closely related to this very, very famous flour than even to sweet potatoes. Genetically, I think we're talking here.
Yams.
Are closely related
what
to
are
this
the flowers
flour.
Like in it? What's the yam on a
orchid? Orchids?
Mm-mm.
The rose?
Give me the first letter.
I'll give you the first letter. You'll get it easily. L. Lilies. Lilies are closer
lilies
to yams.
Lilies and yams.
Than sweet potatoes are too.
I
yams.
Would not know yes. that. Mm. It must be something about the tubular thing.
The tuber.
The thing that's in the ground.
Mm-hmm. What is the origin of the word spud when referring to a potato?
The eyes, the...
It has nothing to do with the anatomy of the potato.
Darn.
Mm-hmm. No, but spud, I've always wondered about that word. It's pretty close to another word.
Did it originate in the U.S.?
It originated in New Zealand in the 1840s.
Spinning dud? Oh, yeah, is it a collaboration of two words?
You're getting closer.
Oh.
Getting closer.
Spud.
I think spud's a funny word.
What, like Mackenzie? Oh.
I'm thinking Ghostbusters. He's looking at me right now, Ray. She's an ugly spud.
That's right. It's one of the best.
So spud is a colloquialism for a spade, and that's what you would use to dig up a potato.
Oh,
so
that's not where I was
New
going.
Zealand. Yes. When and in what context was the idiom "riving the gravy train" first used?
Kenoration?
During the Depression?
You know, it was pre-Depression.
Pre-Depression. Driving the gravy train.
An economic...
Yeah, so the train was taking them somewhere for...
For free?
Prosperous.
What, like Oklahoma Rush?
Welfare Sooners? State.
No, it's actually quite... I mean, I think the best hint I can give you is it's quite literal as I look at the map up here.
There's a train that delivers gravy?
You mean like the dog food?
No, because I think that's why he said kennel ration, but I was thinking about that too. No, you know, it was railroad workers following the engine by building the track, or they're building the track and the engine follows. And so this was the way to make money. The more, you know, rails you laid out, the more money you made. So early 1900s.
Early
1900s.
So where did the gravy part come
in? Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
I believe it still means it's you're money. Making money. Yep. Yeah, I think it's...
Because I'm thinking, is it food?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you work the railroads, you get fed?
Possibly.
My grandfather worked a chuck wagon. That's awesome.
I saw Dan smirk really hardcore when Dave's like, wait, there's a train that has gravy? And when is it coming to town?
I'm just picturing this big, huge... You know, rail car, and you just kind of open the spigot.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you get the chicken gravy or the beef gravy?
Exactly. When do recipes for stuffing a fowl, when you cook it, what date are we talking there? Like, when did it start?
What?
That morning?
When did stuffing recipes come
about? Recipes start?
I'd say the 20s.
Say I think it's earlier
1890s.
Than
1922.
All of those are a little bit off the plate.
Oh.
Get it off the plate.
Yeah.
So 1950?
Gutenberg.
when did recipes emerge for stuffing birds? Is that what you're
basically.
Saying?
It
probably has to do with the bread companies wanting to find another way to sell their product.
I mean, I appreciate your cynicism deeply,
yes.
But that is not it.
Oh. What, is this like a Gutenberg side hustle that we don't know about?
Pepperidge Farm.
You're pretty far off, actually.
1840.
Is that early? No.
I'm thinking movable press.
Well, bread's been around for a long time.
He's talking
movable bread. Yeah, but I'm talking
type.
More like commercial bread.
I think, you know, after he got done with the Bible, he had to produce other things, right?
So the truth of the matter is, it's sort of a biochemical explanation from the way I've heard it. It doesn't say this here. It says we're talking first century AD.
What?
Because the liquefaction of like fowl fat means that it always dries out when you cook it. So you stuff it with something that can absorb that, and it keeps it a little more moist. It's like from the very beginning, you better shove something in there, or you're in for some dry bird. Yeah. That's all I got to say.
Interesting. And that's better than a spud.
When, who, and why did stuffing start to be called dressing?
When it was cooked outside the turkey.
Yes, okay, that's fine. Stuffing sounded vulgar, bless you, to these elites in the United States. Oh. What time would that have been?
These elites.
Boston Brahmins.
No.
These elites.
Mm-hmm.
Who would be offended by the word stuffing?
Probably Yaleys.
Oh, no. Is that something Thurston Howell would say?
A little bit before that.
Oh.
The elites.
Or the...
What, the Kennedys? What? The Kardashians.
No, it says Victorian nobles of the early 1800s were like, well, stuffing nobles. Sounds vulgar.
So is Kardashians.
We'll call it dressing.
Well, they were really attuned to anything that would sound vulgar.
That's,
yes.
There you go.
Or slightly sexual.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Very much true. When did the Campbell Soup Company publish its first recorded recipe for green bean casserole?
Ooh.
First century.
1930.
27.
40 AD.
You're all over the map, but I think Stephen might have gotten closest. It was 1955. Okay. FYI, the name of the recipe was Green Bean Bake, and it has never once been altered every time it's been published.
I have
Green Bean Bake.
Green Bean
Hot
Bake.
Hot dish.
Hot dish. I'm telling you, this was a very good indicator, relatively speaking, of Leslie and I's marriage. We have our first Thanksgiving together, and I, you know, as a good Italian boy, looked at that across my in-laws' table and said, "What is that?"
Yeah,
I had never seen it before in my entire life.
How do you think I feel?
Did the original recipe have the
French fried onions?
Yeah, the onion things? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Had you seen stuffing before?
I have, although, you know, mostly with Italian sausage mixed in. I mean, let's be serious.
Yummy.
I'll have to share with you my Thanksgiving tradition here in Detroit. So.
Which is?
We always went to Windsor.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because Thanksgiving here in Windsor, it's a Thursday.
Yeah, exactly.
So every dim sum restaurant in Windsor is always packed with every Chinese restaurateur.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
I just remember standing in line 3 hours watching food go by.
You guys do know what creamed onions are?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's a New England thing.
Creamed
also, oysters
onions.
Are, too.
Sure. Oh, oysters and stuffing. Absolutely.
I love oysters.
Let's jump off of the Campbell soup thing here.
Get off the wagon?
And go even deeper is what I was going to say. According to Campbell's, what percent of cream of mushroom soup sales go towards making green bean casserole every Thanksgiving in the United States?
13.5%.
It's higher.
Really?
Is this going to be like the cranberry sauce thing again?
Yeah, 25.
Probably.
You mean it's of all their sales? 25.
34.
Let me call
it
Kendra.
It says 40%.
Wow.
40%.
Of mushroom soup?
Cream of mushroom soup.
Cream of mushroom, yeah.
Yep.
People must not be buying cream of mushroom soup throughout the year then.
Probably not.
Or they're stocking up on it, you know.
Do you use the condensed part thing
use
for
the
that?
Condensed.
Yeah.
Condensed? I've never seen it.
So you mix it with a can of water?
Right?
Yeah. Oh.
Is there uncondensed?
Well, you uncondense it when you put the water and or milk
no,
in
no,
it.
No, what I'm saying, can you buy it?
Uncondensed?
Yeah,
you can. Yeah.
Oh, like expanded. Or
Costco
whatever
will sometimes have a big tub
of
mushroom soup.
Yeah, but Costco also sold that 7-gallon mac and cheese, too, a couple years ago.
That's true. That's true.
You all should have seen the way that Jim was gesticulating. A big tub.
Well, it's got to be big if it's from Costco.
Got to be. Who trademarked the name Turducken in 1985?
Ooh. Martha
served at his
Martha
very
Stewart.
Famous restaurant.
Oh,
it's a good guess.
Puck?
No, it wasn't Wolfgang Puck. Nope. Mm-mm.
His famous restaurant.
What year was it?
1985. He was pretty big in the early to mid-80s.
Paul Prudhomme?
Paul Prudhomme, yes.
The Dame de Louise of cooking.
Uh-huh.
That's right. Who popularized turduckens in the United States in the 1990s?
Paul Prudhomme.
Mm-mm.
No. Oh, that makes sense to me.
No, it was seen by millions and millions. On Thanksgiving Day.
Julia Child.
TV.
Oh.
Martha Stewart.
Mm-mm.
I'm thinking like Friends or something.
They still do it.
Seen on TV on Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, yes.
Oh, is it NFL, the football game?
Who?
So who?
Dallas Cowboy or Detroit?
Madden? John Madden?
John Madden is the correct answer.
Because it's always...
John Madden would always award a turducken to the team that won a Thanksgiving game. And boy, is that just disturbing. A chicken shoved into a duck, shoved into a turkey.
What have they given away in the last few years? Didn't they have like a six, you know, like an eight-legged turkey or something
they had
like
an
that?
An eight-legged turkey for the person who got the most rushing yards.
And, oh, geez.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Where do they get an eight-legged turkey from?
They have the leg moving at certain points.
Biolab?
Some 86-pound
like toothpicks.
Yeah.
FYI, it has the turducken has definitely caught on outside the United States. It's popular in the British Isles with this name, not turducken.
Mutant turkey.
Frankly, that has the
like
word turd in it.
The tribird.
Tribird is pretty close.
What?
said the English prof. Three bird roast, sometimes it's called the royal roast.
Trifowl.
I can't see the queen ever having partaken.
The corgis might.
The corgis,
yeah.
Yeah, you got to feed the corgi somehow. Tear off one leg for each corgi.
According to tradition, a Connecticut town in 1705 canceled Thanksgiving that fall because there wasn't enough what?
Native Americans?
Corn.
Condensed mushroom soup.
No.
Cranberries.
Well,
pumpkins is closer than gourds. Any other
squash.
Answer I've heard.
Les Nessman.
Apples?
I knew the WKRP reference was coming sooner or later.
Potatoes.
Oh, my gosh. So they needed an ingredient, according to this tradition, to make pumpkin pie that they simply didn't have, but it wasn't pumpkin.
Oh.
Pumpkin spice?
Cinnamon?
Some kind of spice?
Ritz crackers. They didn't have pumpkin spice, the next best thing they probably
nutmeg.
Could have made
nutmeg,
was...
Nutmeg, yeah.
No, it wasn't a spice.
Cinnamon.
It wasn't a spice.
It wasn't a spice, it would have been...
Flour?
A way to keep... scientific again, a way to keep, you know, sugar around as things are getting cold. That's the best I can do.
Salt?
No. No.
A way sugar to keep sugar around when it's getting cold?
How do you store sugar without all the water in it? That's my thing. It wasn't.
Eat it. Oh,
the little clay bears?
I mean. I mean, you're really, really close. I'm looking for the answer of molasses is what I'm looking for. And apparently they ran out of molasses.
What? I don't get it.
That was their sugar source.
That's actually used to put
molasses.
You meant to put the moisture back into the...
Yeah.
Sorry.
Instead of cane sugar, they use molasses sugar.
Thank you.
This is just really funny. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Apple pie is the state dish of which New England state?
All of them.
Yes, but particularly
Vermont.
Vermont, yes. And last but most certainly not least, what is apple pie in England often made with? Certainly way more often.
Ritz crackers.
Ritz crackers. Yes.
That is not what it says
what?
Here.
A lard?
No, but that might be true, but yeah. I think there's something else that goes in the filling besides
cheese?
Apples. It's cheese.
Oh, cheese.
Yes,
oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
Wensleydale, to be specific.
Wensleydale. Is that cheese? What kind of cheese?
Wensleydale.
That's in the mix.
Is it?
I guess. I mean, we often have a cheese.
Yeah, a chunk of cheese
slice
with your apple pie.
Yeah, like cheddar
sharp cheddar.
Pie.
Yeah,
that makes
yep.
sense.
Especially if you're out of vanilla ice cream.
Wensleydale is a sharp cheese.
But that sounds like it's mixed into the apple.
That's what it says here.
It is.
In the filling is what it says.
The Brits put it in the pie.
Absolutely.
Instead of with it.
Yummy.
I was thinking more, I believe Wensleydale is one of the very specific cheeses mentioned in the Monty Python cheese sketch.
Is
you
it?
Know, when the guy goes and he's like, can I just have some Wensleydale? Well, sure, sir. Oh, no. The cat's eating it.
I'd forgotten that.
Let's find some.
Can't eat cheese?
For being a cheese shop, you don't have much cheese here. Oh, we have plenty, sir.
I wonder what kind of cheese it is.
We'll look
I
it up.
Want to say it's a soft cheese, but
oh,
I could be wrong.
Dan, we're going to Monger's tonight.
Oh, professors, I am so very sorry. We are at the end of our wonderful togetherness today, but the time has come to say goodbye, Dave.
See ya.
Dan.
See ya.
Jim.
Farewell.
Stephen.
Goodbye.
And Heather.
You don't look a day over 35.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.